People are looking for something new.
I want to find out what I'm capable of.
You're a part of something bigger than just you running a race.
Whether or not you win this thing, you've got to decide how you're going to walk out of here when it's all said and done.
I've tried a lot of hobbies. Now, I'm on the hunt for my next hobby. Some common, some not so much. This week...
Are you ready?
The Spartan Race. You're listening to That's a Hobby. This episode, I get physical. I run, I climb, I dig, and do a whole lot of burpees surviving a Spartan Race.
We had one goal in mind when we started Spartan, and it was to rip people off the couch.
The Spartan Race is actually a series of obstacle races, and they vary in distances. They can be as little as 3 miles or all the way up to marathon distances. They're held all around the world, up to 30 countries, including Canada, US, South Korea, and Australia. There are a few different flavors of the Spartan Race. There's a Spartan Sprint, the Spartan Super, the Spartan Beast, and the Spartan Ultra. There's also a military series, a winter series, and team events. The Spartan Race was founded by Joe DeSena. His mother was a yoga instructor, and his father was a business owner. He's a combination of entrepreneur and elite athlete. In 2000, in the Quebec wilderness, DeSena and his team became stranded during a 350-mile winter adventure race. He had to dig himself beneath the snow to survive. It was there that he claims he made a distinction between difficult and desperate experiences that inspired him to create his own endurance races. He then decided to develop a new obstacle course race series and called it the Death Race. The first Death Race in 2000 had 8 competitors and only 3 of those completed the race. In 2009, he founded Spartan, a less strenuous obstacle course test. The first Spartan race was in 2010 in Wilston, Vermont. Let's talk about the race. There are 4 flavors. There's Spartan Sprint, which is about 3 miles and 20 obstacles. There's a Spartan Super, which is 8 miles and 25 obstacles. The Spartan Beast, which is 13 miles and 30 obstacles. And the Spartan Ultra, that's 30 miles and 60 obstacles. The obstacles vary from race to race, but they include a fire jump, climbing under barbed wire, wall climbing, mud crawling, the over-under trough, which is really a series of obstacles where runners climb over a wall, then under a wall, and through a square hole placed in a wall. There's the spear throw, the rope climb, heavy object carries, Herculean hoist. There's the traversal wall, that's similar to a bouldering wall. The hobby hop, where participants wear a thick rubber band around their ankles and have to hop through tires. There's the slippery wall, which is a wall built on an incline and covered in grease. There's the zigzag log jump, the steep mud climb, tractor pulls, underwater submerging below walls or a dunk wall, the Atlas carry, tire flips, stump balances, rope swings, and the discontinued gladiator arena. Are you sold yet? There is one more unofficial obstacle, the burpee. If you can't complete any of the obstacles I just mentioned, you have to do 30 burpees as a penalty, and you can't continue until you complete them. If you don't know what a burpee is, it's a bodyweight exercise that started in the military. It's basically a combination of a squat, a push-up, and a jumping jack in one little horror show. Why do people subject themselves to this much discomfort? Why do people pay to subject themselves to this much discomfort? I remember asking myself that question 10 minutes into my Spartan race, but I'll get there. According to University of Chicago's psychology professor, C.N. Beelock, it's about succeeding in high-pressure situations. It's a source of confidence when you do things outside of extreme sports, knowing what you're able to accomplish. Like some other hobbies, the allure of this hobby is partly the community. You can run the race as a team, there are training camps, and there's even a sense of community during the race. Said one racer, "Let's say it's a wall or a net that's difficult to get over. Other teams will stay and help, just like camaraderie, helping each other out, encouraging people. It's inspiring." That's not true of other races, where it's really a solo activity where you wear headphones and you're focused on your time. The Spartan Race isn't really a race, it's more of a challenge. And that's one of the main criticisms. it's not a race. And the culprit? Probably the burpees. There's a lot of strong feeling about the burpees, said one elite racer. Every time I've completed a burpee forfeit at a Spartan race, which is a lot of times, I've been overtaken by people who haven't even completed all the reps, or who've skipped them altogether. They think it's a systematic problem since it relies on the honor system of people who are either competitive, exhausted, or even delirious. Probably a combination of all three. The race uses the honor system because there just isn't enough race marshals to keep track of everyone doing burpees. In the end, the Spartan race is growing in popularity. It's seen as a challenge for some, a race for a few, and a nightmare for most. It's time to race. I was asked at work if I want to sign up as a group, and I thought it sounded like fun, kind of like the show Survivor. I'd been running regularly for years, so I didn't think it was that much harder than a typical 5 or 10K. Eight of us formed a team and paid $100, and I thought that was excessive compared to like the $40 I'd pay for other races. As we got closer to the August date, teammates suddenly remembered weddings or other family obligations that conflicted with the race. By race day, we were down to 3 out of 8 people. Race day. I wasn't going to strap my phone to my arm to track the race because of the mud, so I told my wife the race would probably take an hour. Given that my typical 5K runs were less than half that, I figured doubling the time was realistic. We drove an hour outside of the city in the middle of a hot, sunny day to what turned out to be a ski summit, not the rolling hills I imagined. My teammate commented that scaling it 3 times would be difficult. Maybe it would take more than an hour. The temperature hit 40 degrees Celsius by our 1 p.m. start time. I was traveling light and didn't really have any water. As we passed a muddy horde of people who just completed a race, I noticed they weren't smiling like the photos in the Spartan race site. My confidence was melting away. It nearly evaporated when I noticed the long lines at the porta potties with all the nervous racers. The race. We were corralled to the starting line, which wasn't a ribbon, but a 6-foot-tall wooden gate. I looked around at the other racers. They were all more excited than I was. They couldn't stand still. There were battle cries. There were people who were dressed like extras from the movie 300. The race started, but the gates didn't open. Instead, everyone started running and climbing the gate. The first obstacle, and I was already contemplating quitting. At this point, my goal shifted from impressing my colleagues and strangers around me to just finishing the race. I couldn't remember the last time I'd climbed anything, so I used the planks added to the gates to assist people like me. I think I was the only person who used them. Once I was over the gate, I took off to keep up with the group. It kind of felt like we were being chased. We turned the corner and ran into the summit. I started to climb it at a walking pace and being passed by groups as they kept running. I warned them in their head that they should save their energy. I was feeling good about halfway up. I trained on hills and was ready for this. The runners had slowed down, some were taking breaks. Suddenly, I started to grow some confidence. I approached the next obstacle, the famous mud pit with barbed wires overhead. This would make for a great photo, I thought. I dove in. The mud wasn't really as muddy as it looked. It was really there to hide sharp rocks. Instead of army crawling, I thought I'd bear crawl to save my knees. The barbed wire turned out to be barbed wire. Now the cuts on my back were competing for attention with my throbbing knees. Luckily, I brought old workout gloves so my hands were saved. The pit became more of a soccer pitch in length. My confidence sunk. I cleared that obstacle and now had the pleasure of continuing the race with the weight of mud on my clothes and in my shoes. At least it was back to the hill climb. I noticed the group behind me started to thin. I reached the next obstacle close to the top of the summit. It was a 2-story wall made of a few metal pipes. As I waited in line, I looked for something I could use as a boost. Oh, that's good, I thought when I saw bundles of hay at the bottom of the wall to cushion any falls. When it was my turn, I looked down and saw something strange that took a few seconds to register. An indexed finger-sized turd. I assumed it was human because I didn't see anyone walking their dogs during the race. I actually managed to climb the wall fairly easily, but I didn't celebrate because I was preoccupied by the turd and the circumstances that could have led to it. Why were people themselves? How did they do it discreetly? Why didn't anyone else seem to care? If I had fallen, could I have avoided it? I snapped to it when I realized I'd made it to the top of the summit. I passed a big group gulping water at the water station. I'd trained in the summer heat, and I was in the zone. Running downhill was a relief. I noticed I was descending quickly and wondered how I'd pay for it the next day. The obstacles at the bottom involved lifting heavy things and balancing across wooden beams. This was more like what I had imagined, and I didn't see any more poop. I thought that I may end up enjoying this. Beyond those obstacles was a second summit climb. I left my colleagues behind as I picked up momentum. I passed a few people vomiting. I assumed they drank too much water. I also passed one of the extras from 300, who was being attended to what looked like medics. They were covering him with blankets because he said he was cold. I didn't stop to make sense of it. The obstacles on the way up were a mix of climbing and crawling, and luckily still no poop. I was starting to slow down, but luckily I reached the top, and again, I skipped the water station. The parallel bar obstacles seemed to be causing a lot of shoulder injuries, so I made sure to keep good form as I crossed them. The racer behind me fell, grabbing her shoulder. The obstacle official approached her and told her she had to do 20 burpee penalty to continue. This was with her bad shoulder. I ran down the summit again with ease, leading me to worry about the consequences to my legs. I was also wondering what time it was. The obstacles here involved a lot of rope climbing. I'd only seen them in movies about gym classes in the 70s and 80s. I opted to do burpees. I noticed the burpees took more effort than climbing the summit both times. I climbed the summit the last time. I started to hit a wall and my pace slowed. I looked around at one point and couldn't see anyone ahead of me or behind me. What if I faint, I thought. I started to get thirsty. As the sun baked the mud on me, I felt goosebumps and a wave of cold wash over me. I know this wasn't a good thing.
What if you stopped? What if you said, "That's enough. I'm finished." What if you just walked away?
I took breaks and counted my steps in between. When I reached the top, I added tunnel vision and nausea to the list of signs that I wasn't in good shape.
Maybe you could try again tomorrow.
I saw the water station ahead. I would be okay. I could hear some sort of announcement, but couldn't make out the words. When I got closer, I learned they were running out of water and were rationing the remaining supply. I drank my shot glass serving, and I savored it. I was on autopilot going down the hill one last time, alternating between running and walking. I didn't feel cold or nausea, but I was still concerned. At the midway point obstacles, I failed the balancing and climbing portions. I did as many burpees as I could and walked past the staff. They didn't stop any of us. I continued the final ascent and saw the last obstacle in the distance, a 25-foot wall with rope. Waiting in line, I contemplated walking around it. But with all the clapping spectators and everyone watching, I decided to give it a try. Surprisingly, this was the easiest obstacle because the wall was coated in rubber. I climbed down the rope net on the other side. I was greeted with burning logs blocking the finish line. I walked around those and crossed the line. I drank a pitcher of water. Cleaning up involved using a rubber hose and a pile of discarded clothes. The race ended up actually taking me over 3 hours. By the time I got to my phone, I had dozens of missed calls and texts from my wife. She was worried I was covered under a blanket and had messaged my colleagues on Slack. Here's some race advice. Set aside a full day. Wear clothes and shoes you can throw out after. Wear gloves. Try not to run downhill, it's tempting, but you won't be able to walk for a week after. If it feels cold and it's 40 degrees Celsius out, take a break. I don't think you can find a hobby more physically demanding than obstacle racing. It's one part competition, one part a playground for adults, and one part bragging rights. And for me, it was internal bragging rights for when I faced another challenge. Recounting this experience, I kind of want to run it again. But every time I think about it, I feel anxious. Maybe I'll try to create a team at work and see how that goes. Hey, listen, I want you to know that your time is valuable to me. And the fact that you spent it listening means a lot. So thank you. please remember to subscribe wherever you listen, and maybe tell a friend or two. If you've tried this hobby or you have hobby ideas for me, let me know on Twitter or Instagram. See you next week.